Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, first segment, we got hobo power, and it is a killer hobo power. Maybe the best hobo power segment we've ever done, and that's saying a lot, and the news is coming as well. First.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new year of Adam's Monthly Nut hath begun. We kick off 2021 with a bang, with products like a bottle of Promescent Delay Spray to keep you going all year long, a collapsible water bowl to cure feminine canine hydration syndrome anywhere it strikes, a Secret Santa gift, because let's be honest, we got Corolla gifts galore at the warehouse, and a digital download of the first three glorious years of the Ace Awards. The year of the devil is behind us. Get ready for an all-new year of Adam's Monthly Nut. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, a spirited round of hobo power, and a live Q&A courtesy of Stereo. And now, calling for the country to come together and unify, just like his eyebrows, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church are getting on. Managed to get it on now. Thank you for tuning in and telling a friend, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Cool.
All right, we'll do some hobo power. I'll give my measurement of stink, my units of stink. Something I dreamt up on Loveline, the TV show, I feel like a million years ago, which was... We have all the different BTUs for heat and all the fathoms and leagues for depths of the oceans, Kelvins, yeah. And all that. But we don't have anything for stink. All people do is, it was totally rank. So I will give you guys a grade on the stinkiest thing you've ever come around. First, I will say I watched Tiger, the HBO doc on Tiger Woods last night.
Me too.
Rachel, you could tell, was supposed to come in, but she canceled, so I watched it on behalf of that, although I would have watched it anyway. I find that story's infinitely fascinating.
Well, and when it comes to part one, you could probably say she was supposed to come in on that as well, but didn't really.
Yeah, she showed up right at
the kind of a teaser.
Last 10 seconds, and it's heating up, so it's very interesting. A couple things I didn't know. I always knew Tiger's dad was all about it and pushing him and getting him to do all that stuff at
quite a character
at an early age. I didn't know the mom was so hardcore, too.
Yeah, you never hear about Tita, and I always just assumed that Mr. Woods was kind of maybe had some Joe Jackson tendencies, but apparently the mom was a quiet force behind. Was this kid ever treated with any kindness at home? Hard to tell.
Hard to tell. I mean, there were things about the dad. Let's kind of break the dad down. He was a Green Beret, which is interesting.
Yeah. With explosives or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He would go behind the lines and do demolition stuff.
Demolition.
I would. It's explosives. So the like parts of the dad that were kind of good dad impulses, like. He would go out and hit golf balls against the net in his garage, and his, like, I don't know, 5-month-old son, Tiger, was enthralled by it and used to want to go out there and watch him do it. So it, like...
Can we buy that?
Yeah, that's a good point. We don't know what to buy. Yeah, it's not like his 5-month-old set up the high chair in the garage and then climbed aboard.
Yeah, it could have been more of a Clockwork Orange situation. Remember he said the mom would feed him in between bites? I mean, who knows?
Holding his eyelids open with toothpicks, right. Watching his backswing. Yeah.
listening to Beethoven.
So, you know, and then he said his son, you know, was enthralled by it and wanted the golf clubs and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, yeah, okay. Your son's has this unyielding desire somehow to do this activity. But there were a couple of weird parts. Like, there is one with the mom, Tiger's mom and Tiger's dad that I always found sort of weird, which is after he wins the Masters, he walks right from the 18th green, sees his dad and hugs him and never stops hugging him. And his mom is just standing there like the whole fucking time. Like, it was a prolonged hug. It was a extended dance version of a hug. And the mom just is standing there the whole time, like literally right next to her son and her husband, just never. They may still be hugging. I don't know. I don't know. I have to check that out. But I mean, it was like it is. It's a little weird that in first things first, like usually when you win the big whatever, you rush across, you go to the gallery. The first thing you do is you hug your mom. And then you either shake your dad's hand or you hug or you do that slap on the back son thing. But he just went over and just collapsed in his dad's arms. And he did it for a very long period of time. And I don't know if the mom ever got a hug. So the mom just like stood there while he never stopped hugging it. And he was going like, we did it. We did it. And he was hugging his dad. It felt weird and uncomfortable that the mom would be just standing right there.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even notice the mom because I was so focused on the hug. I think you're right about that. And not to spoil anything, but when he wins one of the other myriad things that he won and his dad's no longer there, he bear hugs the caddy and the caddy is obviously uncomfortable. Like, okay, we're done. Okay. But he's used to these long embraces and the caddy just has to eat it.
The caddy... It's funny. So you're being hugged by the most famous man on the planet in front of everyone. And it's the caddy who's going, all right, wrap it up.
Yep.
Like, let's bring this home.
Patting him on the back, trying to push. Yeah. Yep.
When the guy you're hugging starts patting you on the back, that is equivalent to ladies when you're talking to your guy and he goes, will do. All right, will do. Yeah, will do. That. Well, yeah. So I'll see you when I get back then. Will do. The pat on the back is the wrap it up move.
Yep.
You do the initial embrace, and then when the pat starts happening, that means it's time to deplane, baby. So that was funny. I was noticing that the caddy wanting to get out of the hug much earlier than Tiger did.
Yep.
I think Tiger was sobbing so hard that it seemed like he didn't want to turn open and kind of face the camera with all the tears. So maybe that was part of it. But fellas, when you feel that pat between the shoulder blades, third or fourth pat, that means it's time to break it off, man. That person you're hugging wants out. And I would also argue at the Christmas party when you've had a few belts and the hot secretary's leaving and you go, look, Tammy, come here, baby. I'll see you in the new year.
Happy holidays.
You start feeling that slap on the back.
Yeah. Okay.
Wrap it up.
That's the manager giving.
Bring
you
it home.
Yeah, you start feeling the rub on the back. That means it's time to share an Uber back to Tammy's pad. But if you're getting the hard pat on the back, that's wrap it up time.
Yeah.
So I did notice
tapping out.
I did notice a lot. Yeah, literally tapping out. I did notice a lot of hugging going on. I also. It's always funny when you it's funny for me to contrast anything to my family because it all feels insane. Like also just like he got miniature golf clubs. Where did he get miniature golf clubs? Like his dad who makes his middle class dad went out and purchased them, I guess.
End of story.
Yeah.
The end.
The other thing that was like, oh, the parents just really digging in, like in the non-Corolla way, which is when he came back from Stanford and he told his parents he was going to come back like on a Saturday, but he came back on a Friday and didn't tell them just because he wanted to spend time with his girlfriend and not be harangued by his family. Yeah, and they found out about it and they went ballistic on him. Like, here's the rule, parents, bosses, cops, anybody. If you lay out a bunch of shit that's unrealistic, you know, if your curfew for your stepdaughter's 8 p.m. and she's 18, you can't yell at her when you caught her sneaking out the window. You encourage that.
Right.
Tiger did not tell. Then you get this. You betrayed us. You didn't tell. Yeah. Well, you weren't told because you would have freaked out if I did it. If he said, if he had a normal environment like most people and went, hey, I'm going to come home a day early, but I'm going to stay with my girl and then I'll see you guys Saturday morning. And he went, OK, son, have fun. Well, then he would have told you.
Yeah. Would have gone a lot smoother.
But that's not who you are. Well, it wouldn't have gone smoother because they would have freaked out over that. That's what I'm saying is you create this environment. Nobody's better aware of the environment than Tiger, right? Tiger knows who his parents are. Tiger, unlike every other college student on the planet, feels that if I tell my parents I'm just going to come home a day early and spend the day with my girlfriend, I haven't seen her in 3 months, and then I'll come see you guys Saturday, he knows they're going to freak. He knows they're going to forbid it. Right. It's unacceptable. So he says nothing, comes home a day early, gets busted, and both parents go bananas on him, which is crazy. The mom going, shouldn't the mom, Gina, have been like, oh, God, the guy's in college. He has
alone.
A girlfriend.
He's in love. Yeah. But she is not. She's kind of the silent killer.
Right.
But it's not. They didn't just go ballistic on him. They didn't just light him up. They forced him. Allegedly, a letter was written coincidentally right after that to Tiger's girlfriend saying, I no longer want to see or hear from you. You've been a distraction. I feel you've manipulated me. You have used me. I never want to hear from you again. Really? The morning after he comes home, after spending the night at his girlfriend's house, he randomly comes to this conclusion by himself.
Guys do weird things in the refractory period.
Yeah, that was definitely the spookiest Stockholm syndrome kind of part of the Stepford son part of the entire episode, which is like a forced resignation from a girlfriend. Like literally, I guess you didn't see that, Brian, or the doc. He had this girlfriend of several years, maybe 2-3 years,
like, but high school into college.
That's a big fat 2 years for a girlfriend. I know. Yeah. I was beating off during that period. But you have that girlfriend. That's your girlfriend. That's your first girlfriend. That's, you know, lose your virginity. That's go to the prom. That's even though I'm going to Stanford, I'm not going to forget about you.
Formative years.
I'll be back during the spring break, blah, blah, blah. And he just pens this letter of resignation to her just saying, I mean, talk about externalizing. Look, you could just say, hey, I'm gay. Or you could just say, you know, I'm going to focus on my career and I don't think I can have a relationship from a distance. Yeah. Or
you could have gone a whiplash on her.
You could have gone a million different directions, but you want this whole thing where you just dumped it all on her? Like, that was a crazy, I don't know. Is that shit online, Maxipata? Because
that's on HBO Max.
That part. Somewhere in the middle of this thing where he basically wrote her this super cold letter and blamed her for like manipulating him.
Yeah. And using him. And lest you think she made it up, she has the letter.
Yeah.
She has the receipt.
Wow.
Yeah. And he, I mean, his dad and mom must have just been standing over him while he wrote that letter, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was checked.
Could you imagine having that kind of influence or sway? Like if I was like standing over my daughter or son when they were 19 going, all right, take a note, I need you to send it to your loved one, they'd be like, fuck off, old man, I'm not even getting close to that. I wouldn't even
close the door.
Yeah, I would have never even, I would have told my dad to fuck off, I'll burn the fucking house down. Like, I was not gonna do any of that shit.
I was so lazy it was hard to stand over me to write a thank you note, let alone a breakup note.
It was just this brutal letter which completely blamed her. I don't even know how that worked. Like, for what? Being his girlfriend?
Well, and you know, that house was the only house where he ever felt normal. They would have dance parties,
the girlfriend's house. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. They would make goofy videos and he could be a kid. Well, that was in direct conflict with what Mr. Woods was trying to create. So how do you spin that in that Joe Jackson, you know, Ike Turner type of way, saying, not only have you let me down, but she has let you down. How do you do that? How do you even get into that place?
Yeah, it made you kind of realize. And then after that, it's explosive stardom. You just kind of wonder, did that kid ever stand a chance? Like, did he ever have a chance of being normal? Like,
did he not have a childhood? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, because he was a semi-pro from early on, and he was a minor celebrity from early on. And did he just not have a normal childhood and then kind of try to make up for it as an adult?
According to the teacher, his grade school teacher, he begged her to talk to his dad and say, can I try another sport? And the teacher did and said, you know, nobody wanted to deal with Mr. Woods at the school. He was just a pain in the ass, apparently. And she said, you know, maybe he could try another sport and see how he, and that was out of the question. So childhood doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, whenever the ex-Green Beret with a golf club is coming to see you, that's never a good sign when you're a counselor.
Position.
No, it's not good. The demolitions guy's got a 9-iron and he wants to talk, that guy. I don't want to correct you, Gina, but I'm not sure. Was Tiger saying he wanted to try other stuff? Because I think it was the teachers and the counselor saying he should do other things, and his dad going, no.
I thought the teacher said he came to me and asked me to talk to his dad, and I agreed. That's what I thought she said.
Quite possible. Either way, he did not have a normal childhood. He basically was all about golf. And he was, you know, on the Mike Douglas show putting when he was two or whatever it was, famously. And just never. He would never talk either when they put the mic in his face. Yeah. You know, it's always weird with the Mike Douglas going, do you want to be a professional golfer? And they just stand there and just stare. But it was weird. And you realize how, I mean, in a weird way. Well, here's an interesting thing. Michael Jackson-esque in terms of never had a chance. Yeah. And then also at some point, sexuality being expressed in a bizarre way or an atypical way. Yes. I mean,
you mean just in terms of what dad is modeling?
I'm saying if you get hold of a young man or a young woman and you scramble their childhood, like if you kind of think about your sexuality, you know, your sexuality and the way you express your sexuality, and we'll say the sanest version is you meet a man or you meet a woman and you fall in love and you get married and you stay married, like that would be the sanest version or the most typical or the most
storybook version,
the normal version of it or something. Get hold of a young man, get hold of a young woman, put them in a bizarre upside down pressure cooker world from age, you know, 3 and a half on, make their childhood anything but natural and normal, and then see if their sexuality resembles anything natural and normal too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You think like Miley Cyrus or someone who just, you have to go so far off the deep end because you don't know what normal is.
Well, you know, I did Loveline for a million years. If somebody got molested at some point in inevitably without a lot of counseling, they would have some residue from that bizarre abnormal trauma essentially that took place when they were young to now how it sort of manifests in their adult relationships, sexuality and that kind of stuff, right? So it makes sense that if you get hold of people, male or female, young, and you just do something to them that's bizarre, doesn't have to be of a sexual nature, but just a bizarre environment, that it's probably going to show up in their sexuality as they get older. And thus you get that. So
you see that in kids who are like oppressive religious environments.
Yes,
cults.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Not necessarily molested, but like in a weird, out of the ordinary, extreme situation.
Right, and you pile that on top of dad's indiscretions were not very discreet. So I'm sure they'll address that more in part two. How that affected Tiger. I do have the letter that Dina, the girlfriend,
oh, wrote, look at you.
Or that Dina read. Chris just sent it to me.
Oh, good for Chris. It says, the girlfriend, yeah. Yes.
Dina is reading this out loud. This is what Tiger sent to Dina. Dina, the reason for writing this letter is to inform you that my parents and myself never want to talk to or hear from you again. Reflecting back over this relationship, I feel used and manipulated by you and your family. I hope the rest of your life runs well for you. I know this is sudden and a surprise, but it is, in my opinion, warranted. Sincerely, Tiger.
Duh.
When's the last time you told someone you were breaking up with them and you included your parents never want to see them again?
That went through HR.
Yeah.
My girlfriends didn't know I had parents. They would have been, what? He's got a dad?
I thought you were an orphan.
Who is this man? Yes. And then also, like, your family and you're used me and, like, yep. What, bought you a fucking corsage or boutonniere, like, threw dance parties at my house. Like, you have all the footage of him partying and being a kid and being a teenager and having a fun, like the home movies and him, you know, playing air guitar in the living room with the family. Because evidently she came from one of those families where it's like the fun family. You know what I mean?
Everybody gets along. They're all doing, like, you know, family party night. And he loved being a part of that. But the Woods parents did not.
I think the way you could tell in the 80s if someone was the fun family was by whether they had a sectional sofa or not. Because now everyone's got a fucking sectional sofa. But back then, only the fun houses had a sectional sofa. Because the sectional sofa versus the love seat in the sofa, the seating arrangement was like, you sit over there, and then you sit over there.
You stand in the doorway.
The sectional sofas, we're all sitting together.
Yep.
We're doing,
like it or not.
We're doing charades. We need a sectional sofa. We got it. Yeah.
Yep.
They had a sectional sofa, and that's how you knew they were down to party. That was the fun
family.
Had
to fit everyone at one time.
That's right. That was the yardstick that you measured fun families with. All right. We have a very compelling hobo power call up there. I'm very interested in this. Do we have an intro?
It's time for Hobo Power. Adam's unit of stink measurement.
Hear the mighty rush of the engine. Hear them lonesome hobos call.
You give us your stink story.
Uh-oh.
And we'll rank the funk.
Yeah!
All right. Mike is from Virginia. And this story sounds like the leader in the clubhouse without even hearing it. Mike?
Ace man, how you doing?
Yeah, what's going on? Oh, I have my unit of stink measurement. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Chris printed it out. I forgot about it. Zero doesn't smell bad at all. 13, or 0 to 13, or 13 would be, sorry, a robust fart. 30 is a the smeller must vomit. You will not get past 30 if the smeller didn't yak. And 50 is a cat that's been fed nothing but blue cheese for a week, defecating on a white hot hibachi. That smell, the plume that comes off that.
They'll establish the rankings.
And 100 is purely theoretical. Nobody has ever experienced.
Like, you're vaporized if you experience 100.
Right. They're not alive.
The defecation.
Not alive to tell the tell the story. All right. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem, Ace Man. Hey, Bald and Gina. How you guys doing?
Good. Hey.
So I was in Afghanistan 2012, and I was in the Army, 82nd Airborne Infantry Company. And we're tasked with conducting a clearing operation on a Taliban stronghold village. So infantry company is about 140 guys, just to kind of paint the picture for you. So we loaded up onto some Chinooks, take out our dog handlers, our snipers, EOD, or the explosive ordnance disposal guys, and we do our mission. So we touched down about 0-200, about 5 kilometers outside of this village.
Hold on, is that 2 in the afternoon?
2 a.m.
Zero the 2 a.m.
Yeah, two in the morning. So 0-200, using the dark to our advantage as we all have night vision and the enemy doesn't ostensibly have it.
Right.
So 3 platoons in the infantry company. And so each platoon had a different tasking One of the platoons was doing a blocking position. Nobody in or out of that village via these dirt roads they had.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was to come in after and kind of sweep through after the original platoon, the third platoon, had been in there. So we were delayed about 20 minutes on purpose by design. We were, mm-hmm. we follow on. So once they're in there and have a stronghold and there's no initial firefight, we come in and kind of help them clear it and look for anyone that's trying to get out of the village, what we call squirters.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we got off the Chinook, you kind of lay down in the prone for about 10 minutes. You do a security halt, make sure the birds fly away, the Chinooks fly away. Make sure there's no one right there on top of you. So you're just kind of real quiet. You lay there, make sure there's no initial contact. So we got up from that 10-minute pause, and about 15 minutes later, we heard Apache helicopters. That's a small attack helicopter. We had those on station as air support. So we hear them. They have 30-millimeter cannons and rockets. We hear the 30-millimeter cannons shooting. It's a very distinct sound, mm-hmm. and you can hear it off in the distance. So a bunch of us are looking at each other like, holy shit, they just lit someone up, or something's going on closer to the village. So we get on the radio. We're kind of listening to the chatter. Turns out there was some contact, small arms fire. The platoon that had been ahead of us going in, they did and get into a small firefight. But the helicopter, the Apache, was right there, and they took care of those guys. They found them. The pilots and the Apaches have infrared, so they see like black, white, mm-hmm. hot imaging. So they smoked a couple of these dudes. So our company commander comes over. He tasks my squad. He says, hey, go check this out. Do a battle damage assessment. So we walk up there. We can smell it from like 50 yards out. We're like, what the hell is that? So we get up there, and there was a guy that was an RPG gunner, and then a guy that was an RPG, he was carrying the extra rounds mm-hmm. for the actual RP rocket-propelled grenade. So like in the 80s movies, the bad guys have the RPG. It shoots the rocket-propelled grenade. Well, mm-hmm. usually these guys, there's a guy with a backpack or a satchel that's got five or six extra rounds.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that was wearing the backpack took a direct hit from the 30-millimeter cannon, mm-hmm. and it just lit him up, and all these things exploded. And then it fused like all these empty tubes to him. So he's like this charcoal kind of corpse. He's still smoking.
Was there anything left?
The backpack is fused to him. Yeah. His whole bottom half was gone, but his upper torso was intact.
Is he okay?
Yeah, fine. He walked really it off, listening. You know. Yeah, I gave him an attaboy, away. Gave him a slap on the ass, and told him, you know, get back in there, buddy.
So the guy,
he was dead.
What happened to his partner?
He was smoked. Oh, he was dead too. He got smoked. I think the initial explosion of one of the rounds kind of took them both out, or took mm-hmm. him out. That guy was pretty fucked up too. We didn't even bother calling our medic over. But so there's like nine of us in an infantry squad. I think like six or seven of the guys threw up.
Oh, so like,
wow, these are hardcore dudes.
Well, and this is multi-sensory. Oh, yeah. So this is probably just the sight of that, I would imagine.
This is
the smell.
Yes. And what was it?
The sight, it's like whatever. We've all seen pretty weird stuff like that. You kind of get used to it. But the smell is like, what is that smell? And it was funny because we had this dude that we had nicknamed Spicoli. Mm-hmm. Cause he's just like this, he wasn't from California, but he talked like some burnout surfer dude. So we called him Spicoli, and he gets up there and he goes, check out this Christy motherfucker.
Get
so,
that drop.
Yeah. It was pretty gnarly smell.
Oh boy.
Well, this is good, Mike. It's not only good for you, it's good for America.
It's heroic.
Oh, hell yeah.
And,
it's hoboic.
Yes, it's very hoboic. And there was a lot of burning going on because the rounds, the munitions were on the guy's person when he got lit up.
Right.
So,
right.
And you say you think about nine guys yacked?
So an infantry squad is nine. I had like eight guys with me. I think like six or seven of the nine yacked, not including, I didn't throw up. I'm not sure why. I always had a pretty good stomach like the Ace Man, but, I would have no shame had I thrown up.
Well, I'm going to say from a quick psychological profile of you, Mike, you not throwing up is probably directly connected of the super cavalier way you speak about the loss of human life.
That could be. You gotta compartmentalize this stuff. Otherwise, you're going to get home and have some trouble. And right. It's weird. Like, it affects everyone differently, but I was always able to compartmentalize stuff really well, which I think has helped me in terms of not having any trouble post-service.
Yeah, no, you're an expert at compartmentalism. Yeah. Compartmentalizing. Yeah, sorry about that.
I can't say. So when you type too much, Gina, your wrist starts.
Yeah, you get carpal tunnelizing. Yes.
All right, so good for you. Evidently, the rest of the squad had nerve endings and a soul. And so they were affected negatively by this one of God's creatures and incinerated in front of them. But you, unscathed, I would argue the hike back was better than the hike in for you, Mike. So
It was a good helicopter ride. And then we got back at about 09, still in time for breakfast chow. So that was a bonus.
Oh, boy.
And he could eat, no problem. Had quite an appetite.
Really worked up an appetite. Yeah. I feel sorry. We'll do a little role playing here. Gina.
Yeah.
And Brian.
Yes, sir.
You play the couple that just had to put your cat down, and I'll play Mike. Okay. Hey, am I going to see you guys at the barbecue?
I wish. God, I wouldn't give for that distraction right now.
Mm. I don't know if we'll be able to make it.
What's the problem? I'm putting a pig in the ground.
Gerald.
Going to smoke him like that Afghani guy.
Oh, God.
Sticking in the ground. You remember Mr. Whiskers, of course. You know.
Oh, yeah. Only good cat is a flat cat. That's what I used to say.
Oh, God.
That's funny now. He was a senior citizen.
He was a strong survivor.
Senior citizen for a cat, but a 13-year-old for us. But okay. Well, don't bring the cat then. Fuck it. Just bring a six or a Heineken, and we'll get it on.
We're not definitely not bringing the cat. Mr. Whiskers expired yesterday. The time came, and
was he a can of garbanzo beans? What do you mean expired?
Oh, no, he's in the big scratching post in the sky. Yeah. The big.
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
Then you guys are freed up to come over. What did you smoke him or would you?
We're grieving, Dan.
Yeah, the service is tomorrow. The burial.
The memorial.
Hold on. Right. Speaking of service, I think my cell phone fucked up a little bit. You said there's a memorial?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
The people, a remembrance.
The fucking cat?
Yeah.
Yes,
you smoked the cat yourself. Now you're freed up. You can party. Get a new cat.
He was our fur baby.
Yeah, we're going to share memories, treasured memories from the last decade and a half.
Of what? Him shitting on your pillow? Come on. Get that sixer, Heine.
But I want to see the movie. Gerald put together this beautiful remembrance on his iPhone of pictures and music, and it's going to be really special. Yeah.
Mm. That's sweet, honey. I don't know if it's a movie. It's a memorial. It's a slideshow set to music.
It's a slideshow.
Yeah.
Memories. You had the cat smoked, right? You didn't. You didn't die of a heart attack. You took him into the veterinarian, and they paid the guy to smoke him, right?
What? No, he was on the operating table for his 17th procedure, and he died on the table.
Oh. Yeah, we took him to the vet, of course, to try and fix him again.
Well, listen, we're eating baby backs over here. If you pussies want in, you show up. If not, hey, it's not only fucking Mr. Whiskers' funeral, but it's your goddamn funeral, too. Look, I got to wrap this up. I got to get to the VA and make fun of some of the patients that are undergoing battle fatigue.
Oh, God.
All right.
Put the finishing touches on this slideshow.
Yeah. I you know what I always do when I go visit the guys in the VA? I got a nickel plated revolver with a pearl handle on it, like Patton. And I just go and I do that whole voice, you know. And I put the helmet on, I put the Patton uniform on, and I grab them and I shake them by the shoulders, and I go shell shocked, my ass.
there's real soldiers in here.
Yeah, hey, as long as I'm strapping, you want me to smoke another pet of yours? Save yourself $39.
Oh, God, do not let him in your heartsy.
It's weird that we're friends at all, isn't it?
It is extremely odd that we would even be in the same circle.
And scene. All right. Mike?
Yeah.
Did you like my depiction of you?
Yeah, that was pretty accurate. I think when I first met a lot of my wife's friends, they were like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? But they've grown to understand my sense of humor. So
grown to understand means grown to fear you. Yeah. And then, and your gun collection. Hey, Mike, if half the guys or more than half the guys from the platoon yacked and we had a crispy critter over there. Man.
This could be a new high water mark.
I'm looking down. I mean, this has got to be worse than the cat shitting on the hibachi. Oh, yeah. I mean,
oh my God.
And ironically, the heat. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I don't know. I don't give these out that often, but I'm going 70.
Wow.
I'm going
with
a straight 70.
No.
Wow. Congratulations.
We sailed past 50.
I'm honored and flattered. That beats all the military decorations I received.
Mm. What have you received?
Thank you for your service.
I mean, your standard stuff, you know, just a couple of these, couple of those. That's not why you do it. But, you know, I don't, who cares? It doesn't matter. But, you know, once you've been in the shit, that's all I care about. So I got in the Army, they have a CIB. That's an award. It's called the Combat Infantryman's Badge. It's only for infantry and special operations soldiers. It's the only one that can get it. And that's your certification. Like, hey, you were in the shit. So, you know, whatever happens the rest of my life, I got that.
Well, Mike, I have a quick question for you. How do you respond to when your wife has really bad cramps? Just like really bad that day.
Really bad cramps?
Yeah, she just has really bad cramps. And it's hard to get out of bed. She has cramps.
I take care of her. She's actually pregnant. We're expecting our first kid. So
all
right. I'm down with Mike.
I bend over backwards to take care of her and my dog and stuff. You know, I'm a normal guy. It's weird. When you're over there, you know, yeah, you're a little cavalier about it, but you know, there's a switch you flip when you leave the wire, you leave mm-hmm. the base, and it's mm-hmm. weird. You have to be like, all right, I'm ready to do some stuff that humans really shouldn't be doing. And then you get back inside the base and you're like, all right, do you guys want to watch a rom-com or do you want to watch The Office? Like, what are we watching on the laptop? It's a weird dichotomy.
Yeah.
So kind of goes back to that compartmentalization thing where it's just like, you kind of got to be a sociopath to succeed in that line of work.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for your service. You know, pros and cons, married to Mike. Con, you know, he's got a hefty gun collection and he's bound to snap at some point. Right. Pro, not many guys will go down on you with a yeast infection.
Jesus Christ.
Not many.
What are we talking, 28 in the hobo power?
Mike's in the elite fraternity.
Yeah.
Where he will take care of you. All right. Matt, 51, New York. Emergency room story. Tell us, Matt.
Hey, Adam. Hey, Gina. Hey, Brian.
Hi, guy.
So this happened about 30 years ago, and it still scars me today.
Mm-hmm.
So I was an emergency room orderly. So I was explaining to the screener, that's a person that when you come into the emergency room, takes your vital signs, gets you in your gown, gets you on a gurney, gets you all set up, you know, all the different EKG and stuff, wires and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the gopher of the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
So a gentleman came in. Once again, this is almost 30 years ago. So a gentleman came in. He had what we'd call an upper GI pain. So mm-hmm. gastrointestinal, kind of your intestines.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened while he, like, so we got him all set up. Vital signs were good. I was trying to explain to the screener, you hear of somebody kind of bleeding out,
mm-hmm.
but this came through his anus.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was all over the gurney, the emergency room was feces, rancid blood, pus, like food, you know, undigested food, and pieces of his bowel that had been infected, and had died. And it was everywhere. And we talked, I think Mike was just on before. You gave him a 70, and you said no one could ever reach 100. And I believe that's probably like the speed of light. Mm-hmm. You can only get so close. This is a 99. This is as
hey, we'll give the scores out around your mess.
He makes a compelling case. Every decayed body fluid.
I'm buttering everybody up. This is as close to the smell of death, even beyond death. I smelled dead people because I worked in a hospital, whatever, formaldehyde and stuff. This is everything. Like I said, I'm still traumatic 30 years later. Like when I read the Twitter, when you're inviting people call in, that's the first thing that popped in my mind.
Well, let me tell you my motto. If I owned a hospital, you definitely can smell dead people. That's unavoidable. But if I catch you sniffing a dead person, then we're going to have an issue. And I know it sounds subtle. It sounds subtle, but there's a definite line that gets crossed when you're actually sniffing dead people versus smelling them. Did the guy survive?
I think so.
Okay. All right.
You know, he had to go right to surgery.
Any
right?
of the matter get on you? Any contact with what he expelled?
Yes. Everyone that was in that room was touched by this. Fecal, blood.
Physically.
Everything. Physically, yeah. But there is kind of a bright light to this story was once they wheel this person out, send them off to surgery. I'm the lowest person in the emergency room, and my job is to clean up after this.
No. Oh, wow. Well, no, I'm
pity was given to me. So there is a bright light in this universe that the lowest nurse, her name, I still remember her name was Sherry. She was going to help me, but I must have looked like the lowest dog that had been kicked like 1,000 times. Like I'm responsible. I have to clean up this entire emergency room of all this stuff.
Well,
one of the mid-level nurses looked at me and said, "Matt, we got this." Oh, and those two nurses, and once again, this is early 1990s, whatever the early 1990s version of like a hazmat suit, like with covering your shoes with like booties and so the mask and everything.
She took over.
They
dressed up in
hazmat suit, and they cleaned up the entire room, and I did not have to.
Okay.
It's a pity.
Matt, I was going to jump in and have you and give you a 71 just beating out our Mike, our Green Beret. But you then stopped and said you didn't have to clean it up. That was left to the lowly nurse. And because you didn't have to clean it up, I've now dropped you down to a 69. So you just got
still a impressive score.
Very respectable.
But I will say, if you had attempted to 69 with this patient, I would have bumped you to 100.
We're in the 90s at that point.
Yes. All right. Wow. Two of the strongest ones we've ever had back to back. Oh, one more quick one. Jason, I don't know how you're even going to compete here with maggots in your old freezer.
I don't know either. Hey, Adam, Brian, Gina. Between sophomore and junior year of college, I had a roommate. He was Indian, and we were good friends, and we shared a mini fridge. And between.
Hold on years, a second. Hold on. Indian roommate, you just got yourself 15 points, bucko. Keep going.
Keep it up.
So I cleaned out the fridge, but we put it into storage for the summer. We were going to get it back the next year. I cleaned out the fridge, and he was going to clean out the freezer. And his mom had batch cooked him a whole bunch of chicken tikka masala, and he had it in the freezer. Except he never cleaned the freezer out. So we put the freezer into mini fridge into storage, and all summer the chicken tikka masala was in there. I didn't know that, so I get the fridge. I move in first to the new apartment. I get the fridge, and I open up the freezer. And it's liquefied and it's filled with maggots. It was disgusting. I vomited. Mm-hmm. I had to get the fridge to the dumpster. And the worst part was my family was helping me move in, and they were laughing at me the entire time.
So there's a psychological component to it. You know, it's solid, you know, if he yacked. In fact,
any other day, this might win.
Yeah, that could have been in the lead.
It'd be strong any other day, but in this particular case, he said he yacked, and technically, if the smeller vomits, you must get you can't get a 30 if the smeller doesn't vomit. I'll just go ahead and give him a nice 30 on that. It's a good effort. It's fine. It doesn't involve mayhem and death. All right, thank you. Do we have an outro? Oh, we do.
Hobo Power. Smell you later.
Yeah.
Although not even that story would turn me off of eating chicken tikka masala.
I agree. And Chris said that Dawson was eating cheese throughout that segment, by the way.
It was rough.
What kind of cheese were you eating?
It was just that string cheese.
Oh.
There in the fridge.
All right. Yeah. Just crazy. Right.
Yeah. Ew, that was tough.
Stop eating.
I like it better than watching you nip off your flask halfway into one of my football stories.
I feel that.
Yeah. Just seeing the guy just, ugh.
Tell
another
again.
Fucking football story.
Here we go.
I picked the wrong day to stop day drinking. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Well, talking about coming across the wire, just as we played that intro, the news is breaking this moment that Trump is going to be impeached. So let me just read you off of ABC 7. I just checked about three news sources. This one's pretty concise. A majority of the U.S. House has voted to impeach President Donald Trump for a second time, just a week after he encouraged loyalists to, quote, fight like hell against election results and a mob of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. The final House vote on the article of impeachment for incitement of insurrection was 232 to 197. There was Republican support for this. I'm literally just reading this as we go, but it looks like it is, the wheels are now in motion. And again, whether it's symbolic or what Brian brought up, that this could bar him from running again, they are going through with it. I thought the news, that one of the headlines was going to be that McConnell was torn, whether he wanted to be a part of it or not. He finally said no, but they're going through with it.
Interesting. I'd be curious about never being able to run again. That's the real implication. The other part's kind of window dressing. Like, I mean,
right.
Never hate McConnell. He's a very savvy politician. So, of course, he's going to dabble, play both sides. You know, he's been doing what he's doing for a long time. He's good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is, I don't know. This feels like, I think if this was, if he wasn't hated as much and his own people didn't want to distance themselves from him or be, whenever whoever runs again comes up, it's going to be he didn't vote for impeachment or he voted against impeachment. Right. Or I think everyone was basically making a tactical move to distance themselves as much as they could from this. Because the thing, I don't know there's enough legal evidence to say like he incited a riot. He said peacefully march. He said the word peacefully. It doesn't really get reported that much. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, I know that word wasn't, yes, I've seen that defense.
On the way to the Capitol, not the tweet that came after.
Oh, right? I don't know. I'm just talking about the speech. I didn't know about the.
Okay.
What was the tweet part?
No, the tweet that came a while. I just wanted to.
Oh, after.
Before or after?
Yeah, on the way to, he said patriotically, and he said peacefully. So that's an argument for not inciting a riot because he said the word peacefully, but that ship has sailed.
Yeah, apparently Mike Pence was pretty cheesed that during this sort of, stronghold inside the rotunda that Trump never called to check on Pence. And there were reports saying he took that pretty personally, because, you know, he said, and, you know, Mike Pence, if you don't do whatever he said, what you're supposed to do or whatever, I'm going to be very disappointed in you. And then people were sort of calling for Mike Pence's head when they stormed the rotunda. Trump didn't check to see if Mike was okay. And I think he took that pretty personally.
Now, you don't have, look, if you're going to be deeply religious, don't expect when people don't check on you. That's my take.
Because, you know, you have the big man checking on you.
You got the big man. He's always checking on you. Pence isn't good with him.
That's right. Hence Pence. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about people distancing themselves from the Trump organization, that's not just politically, because I think it's de Blasio has now said in New York that all they're no longer doing business with the Trump organization in New York. Now, how that works with, you know, Trump Tower or whatever, I don't know. But if the Trump organization has a hand in the real estate, New York will not do business with them.
There is going to be a rash of this stuff, and it won't be just with Trump. Corporate America is distancing themselves from Trump. They're distancing themselves from any political ideas that they basically disagree with. There's going to be this crazy distancing, which, and again, I make fun of Slippery Slope Guy, but it starts with a pretty basic equation, like we're going to get away from Trump, but it's starting to bleed into we are going to distance ourselves from people we disagree with.
Well, that's been happening for a long time, right?
Yeah,
and each time someone gets a little heat under them, they lose their sponsorship. And
that's Tiger Woods is a great example.
Yeah, but this is different. There's
ideology.
It's a theology. It's disagree with, not get caught, you know, with a DUI or battery on an ex-wife or, you know, that obviously corporate America is going to have to get away from anyone who gets caught abusing their spouse or whatever it is. This is corporate America getting away from people who they disagree with politically. Yeah. That's the scary part. That's the slippery slope part. That's the part we're heading toward.
And because you say, you know, what do you say? They're not evil. They're just greedy. You know, it's just business.
Right. This is the delicious irony is this is the free market working, cutting both ways. Imagine the corporate entities, like you mentioned, are a baker and the ideas they don't like are a gay wedding cake. I mean, this is the free market. You're free to go somewhere else and try and get a political donation.
Well, yeah, and to that point, you know, instead of them disagreeing, they're trying to play the chess game. And are the people that buy our product going to disagree? Because they don't care either way, is my thinking.
There's something afoot. And, you know, there's lots of weird shit going on. Like, I just heard this story about this. There's a librarian out of, I don't know, somewhere in Arizona, and they wanted him to like take the Black Lives Matter oath or sign up for the Black Lives Matter, whatever. And he said, I don't think librarians should be political. I think it should be
fair enough.
It should be an even space where you can do it. I'm not going to take that pledge. And they fired him. There's going to be a lot of that shit going on. There's going to be a lot of people getting shit canned or getting sort of deplatformed or getting whatever because of an attempt at neutrality or not going along with whichever way the wind is blowing sort of politically. And that's the part that's getting a little scary. I mean, the tech companies are already doing it. They're already getting into here's our philosophy. And if you disagree with that, we're going to pull you off our platform. It's good for a while, depending on what side you're on. But eventually, it's not a good road to go down. This thing of like we disagree with you. And now when you take something like spousal abuse, like Brian was giving up, like talking about, like Nike drops Tiger Woods or whatever that is. That's something that everyone disagrees with. That's
Let's be more specific, though. Tiger Woods didn't do anything illegal. He was cheating on his wife. He got caught, and the wife was the one who took the golf club to the car. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't want that, whoever they is, Tag Heuer, whoever, it doesn't matter. They don't want that associated with their product for whatever reason. That's their choice to make. They're dropping Tiger Woods, or they're not. Some companies stood by him. That's their choice, too.
I agree, but I think there's still a difference between, you know, immoral behavior and a political difference. That's the slippery slope part. That's the part where we're heading. So the people they disagree with politically are the ones that are getting clipped versus some actions. And again, it could be immoral. You know what I mean? I mean, it's also seeing as how the country is essentially split 50-50 between people who think this way politically and people who think that way politically, you're taking a large group of people and clipping them. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But it's definitely on.
I agree with you in the difference, but this is a philosophical discussion worth having. Do you think that a business should be able to decide who they want to do business with? You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, there's two parts.
Whether it's a political donation or who they allow on their platform.
I think they should be allowed to decide who they want to do business with. I think it's bizarre to do it along political lines, but I think they should be able to decide. But then it gets into deeper subjects like, Twitter's a business or Google or what have you, and they should be able to decide like who's on their platform and who they whatever. That's fine. But if you are, in fact, a monopoly and you're getting preferential treatment from the government in order to keep your monopoly intact, then we're in a different segment
now. It muddies the waters. It's not nearly as black and white when it comes to that situation.
Well, you go back to the cake baking thing. So if you have some religious couple that cooks wedding cakes, and then the gay couple comes in and they go, "We want a wedding cake," and the religious couple goes, "That doesn't fit with our doctrine." Well, the gay couple can go across the street or down the street and find another place to get them to bake them a cake. But if there is no other places where they can get a cake made, and if the government has helped the, you know, it's not an apples to apples comparison, but if the government has been involved with that baker and saying, we're going to help, we're going to have legislation that keeps you in business and doesn't blah, 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 then you're getting into some dangerous territory because now there's no alternative. And in fact, it was the government who's been working with the cake baker. So that's my analogy.
Okay. No, that's fair.
Right. Yeah. This is much more complex than the original, not just the analogy of the cake baking, but the actual story of the cake baking. When as complicated as it got was, should we force this bakery to bake this cake for this gay wedding? Or wouldn't you rather know who, you know, if you're gay or if you're an ally, or if you just, you know, think however you think, wouldn't you rather know who the bakery is that won't do it? And then you don't give them your business.
Yeah,
now we've gone to another level.
That story, just because I know a little bit about it, the couple or the, I can't remember if it was a couple or an individual who had the bakery, was friendly with the gay couple. And they baked them other things for other occasions and so on and so forth. But when it came time for the wedding, they said, it goes against our religion. Yeah, and there were sort of, things were semi-copacetic. And to me, the gay couple didn't have to fucking file a lawsuit. They could have just went down the street and gone, give their money, give your money to a place that supports you. That's kind of my take. All right. What else?
I do have an answer, at least as far as Newsweek is concerned, to the question, could Donald Trump run for office again? Here's an article that says, you know, it goes through a bunch of other stuff, but it gets to the bottom. It says, but being impeached by the House, even for a second time, is not enough to prevent Trump from seeking the White House or any other federal office in the future. That power rests in the U.S. Senate. Article 1 of the Constitution authorizes the Senate to impose two punishments for a public official found guilty of articles of impeachment: removal from office and a ban on future office holding. So we're not there yet. Chuck Norris in the news, and not by choice.
Oh, no.
So he wasn't even there, and he's in the news. Chuck Norris is speaking out after a photo appearing to show him at the Capitol riot went viral last week. That is not Chuck Norris.
There's a lot of Chuck Norris looking dudes there.
Yeah.
that is not him. He posted on Twitter and on Instagram, it has come to my attention that unfortunately there was a Chuck Norris lookalike at the DC Capitol riots on January 6th. It wasn't me. I wasn't there. Let me be clear that there is no room for violence of any kind in our society, including in the context of
the police. So the guy you've been kicking out for 45 years.
Yeah, to Texas Ranger. A peaceful transition of power is fundamental to our democratic system of government. I'm always and will always be for law and order. Your friend, Chuck Norris, not the guy we're looking at now.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, he doesn't condone violence of any kind. Wait, hold on. I have to throw a spinning heel kick to a drunken townie. All right, I'm back. What were we talking about?
This is
weird because last night, one of the things you'll have fun with, although I ended up doing with my son more than my daughter, you can come into the room and go, hey, what's happening, Weeb Eubanks? And you just pull these crazy names out from the past, and they have no idea who these names are. And it's funny because if you're old enough, you'll have all these old football players' names or coaches or TV stars, you know, whatever. And the kids have no reference. And I called my son Lone Wolf McQuaid last night. So I was like, he's like, I'm going for a walk. It was at night. He goes, I'm going for a walk. I go, okay, you bringing the dog? He's like, no. I go, okay, Lone Wolf McQuaid. And he's like, again, it's always amusing to them because it's like I just made it up, you know. But he did do a, who's Lone Wolf McQuaid? And then I said, I think it's a Chuck Norris character. I think Lone Wolf McQuaid was a movie.
Did you look it up? I don't even know that reference.
Yeah, it's a movie in 83.
We're starring Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris?
Yes. And David Carradine.
It's weird that last night I was just calling my son Lone Wolf McQuaid and he wanted to know what it was. And I said, I think it's a Chuck Norris movie. And then he wanted to know who Chuck Norris was. And I go, oh, fucking go walk the
Chuck
fucking
Norris,
dog.
Chuck Norris and David Carradine.
Yeah. But I don't know if Lone Wolf McQuaid sort of gave birth to Walker, Texas Ranger. I think it was one of those things where he was a small town sheriff.
Norris credits this film as a leading inspiration for Walker, Texas Ranger.
Well, I was going to say,
the Western genre is so tropey. I would imagine there's a lot of overlap in, you know, the Lone Ranger, the sheriff, the small town sheriff, all that stuff.
Yeah, but this was a kind of precursor. Like, this gave way to that. And then eventually we got the very special episode of Walker, Texas Ranger, where the 7-year-old had AIDS.
That's Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. When those long-running shows jump the shark, it's always, there's two things that happen. A, they delve into some contemporary situation, you know, somebody on Saved by the Bell has an eating disorder, or Tootie gets strung out on pain pills or whatever. You know, when they start veering away from their marching orders, let's do a fun sitcom. Then years in, they want to start talking about social issues and stuff like that. So that's one marker for jumping the shark as a series. But the other one is, I was watching Love Boat the other night.
You don't say.
Where one of the characters starts playing other characters on the ship, like, oh, it's Captain Steubing's brother. He's a swinging bachelor, and he's got the big hairpiece on and the mustache, and they do the whole, they do that where they
like evil Spock with the mustache and the goatee.
It's a big soap opera trope,
right? Evil Spock, evil Knight Rider. Hasselhoff had his evil cousin. Yeah, like they just put a goatee on him. The acting is equally is pathetic.
Oh, Urkel, Stefan Urkel.
Oh, he did, but so that's
he did like the suave Stefan Urkel.
That thing probably gets pitched in the writer's room on season 3, but everyone shoots it down. By the time you get to season 7, everyone's like, yeah, fuck it, do it. Let's do it.
Throw it in.
Yeah. And also, it's always funny because you feel like the actor who's trapped in the role of Urkel or Captain Steubing wants to stretch his wings a little bit.
That's where my head was. Like, that was part of Urkel's Jaleel White's negotiation in season 7. Like, listen, I'll do this again, but I'm playing a ladies man.
Famously, Samantha's swinging sister Serena showed up in Bewitched.
I don't remember that.
Was that the same actress or was it a different actress?
Yes. No, same. Otherwise, the references would be a non sequitur. But yes, she was played by Elizabeth Montgomery, which I had no knowledge of when I was 7 and a half. So they fooled me.
And they never gave any credit to Patty Duke for this.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She played twins?
Yeah, the original.
Yeah.
They're cousins, identical cousins.
Right.
They laugh alike, they talk alike at times, they even walk alike. You could lose your mind because cousins are two of a kind.
Jesus yeah, that was the song. All right, what else we got, Gina Grad?
Well, speaking of TV, we spoke a little bit about Sex and the City coming back and how Samantha, honey, is not going to be a part of it. And now we know how much money they're making. This had to be a lot to walk away from. So Sarah Jessica Parker, Cynthia Nixon, Kristen Davis, they are reuniting for the revival. They will each earn more than $1 million per episode of a 10-episode series.
Got to imagine SJP is going to be in for a little bit more than that.
Yeah, right? But Kim Cattrall said, not worth it. I mean, can you imagine what a bitch your coworkers are? Just walk away from
that? Adam, didn't we talk about this years ago? Like Kim Cattrall was very insistent that she get equal billing or equal pay or something. Yes. Like she considered herself an equal star to Sarah Jessica Parker, at least at the beginning, if not throughout the run of the series.
She was riding that crest of momentum called Mannequin.
Mannequin.
I love that movie.
Mannequin 2 on the move.
Scant yep. 13 years earlier. So she was still, you know, a rocket sled to the moon with her career. Mm-hmm. You know, I think here's what I here would be my head on this. I have always said this. If one person's an asshole and the other person's accommodating, they can go on forever. If both people are nice and accommodating, you can go on forever. If two people are assholes, there's going to be an issue. And you would imagine that Charlotte, what's her name? Like I've interviewed her before.
Kristen Davis.
Yeah, she's a nice person, you know, whatever. I would imagine that there were two kind of alpha females in the group and the alpha females in the group. It's funny whenever you work with these people, they essentially accuse the other person of being exactly who they are. That's how you can know about it. And if you have two of those people in the group, it just doesn't work. And that's probably who it was. She was, there was an interview that she was Kim Cattrall was doing, and I saw it on TMZ. And you know, they basically asked her what it was like working with Sarah Jessica Parker, and she's like, "Yeah, she could be nicer." It was her take on her.
Okay.
But you know, the thing that's crazy about life, and I think about it all the time: like, how many people just shoot themselves in the foot? How many people walk away? You know what I mean? Walk away from multi-$1 million. It's so easy. You can just show up. You can be nice. You can get your paycheck. And you need some free food, and you can go home. Or you can go in your trailer and stew and count lines and wonder why they get to wear these shoes and you don't. Like, it's insane. And I do have these conversations with people all the time where you go, you give this person this opportunity, you give them this chance, you're so generous with them, and they fucking blow it all up. And it's a component that a lot of people have that I would never have guessed when I was a kid. This many adults would have the, you know, look, Sarah Jessica Parker may be a prima donna. Maybe she's a pain in the ass. Maybe she's whatever, but certainly not violent.
Right.
You could work with her. Do you know what I mean? And collect your money.
And would the show be on the air without her or without you? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why I was thinking
Kim
of Cheers.
Would have thoughts about that.
If you're Rhea Perlman or George Wendt on Cheers, like, you could pull this shit because you're a star and you're a good actor and whatever. Or you could say, you know what? This is a gravy train that's going to run for a long time. I'll just sit here and hammer a check.
Yeah, I don't remember a spinoff called Carla.
I completely agree. Like, it's on the show. It's the show's on the air because of her. It's her show. Fine. Good news is it seems like they're favored nations and you're going to get paid the same amount as the chick who's having to memorize all the dialogue in her trailer while you're fucking eating. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grad.
All right. Well, this story, I don't know if this is one of those Twilight Zone situations where it's kind of careful what you wish for. Stephan Thomas has two chances left to get his hands on $240 million, according to Guardian.com. Why is that? Well, Thomas is a San Francisco-based computer programmer, and a decade ago, he was given 7,000 bitcoins as a reward for making video explaining how cryptocurrency works. And at the time, the bitcoins were worth $2 to $6 a piece, no problem. He stashed them away in his little digital wallet, forgot about them. Now, each bitcoin is worth $34,000, and the contents of that wallet are valued at $240 million, but he pulled a Gina. He forgot his password that will unlock his fortune. So he's tried it 8 times. He lays up. He's like going. I would go insane. He lays awake all night trying to, you know, cobble together old memories and what could have been happening. And is this the password? And doing this whole thing. He only has 2 more chances before it is encrypted and gone forever. People have reached out to him. This guy is an internet security expert at Stanford Internet Observatory. He said he could crack the password within 6 months if Thomas gives him 10% of the money. I think you have to. Otherwise, it just poof, disappears into nowhere.
Wow. Is it? It's he could like crack it within 6 months with what? I mean, how?
Algorithms. Who knows? He's smarter than I am. I have no idea. But he says he could, you know, run that, what, millions of algorithms and come up with a password. I don't know.
I would do that. 10% sounds pretty fair for $240 million. And he would end up obviously with over $200 million anyway. So
yep,
not too shabby.
Follow that story.
There's also just physically selling the phone to somebody for $100 million and just going, I'm hedging my bet. That is interesting. I'd be curious. Yeah. I'd be curious if the person who attempted to crack it wanted information like, what is your mom's maiden name? Mm. What is your current password on your current phone or computer? What is
you're giving him your life.
What, there's almost so many variations on most people's passwords.
What's your birth date, what's your dog's name? Like, does he need that, or is he completely just running something else?
I don't know, but you pose a very interesting question, because the guy basically has every code to everything. If he has your social and your mom's maiden name and your first pet, I mean, that's all he needs to just destroy your life anyway, let alone get this money. So that's a really interesting point. The other thing he said, I think this has turned him off of cryptocurrency forever. He said he'll never do this again. He goes, why would you ever want to be your own bank? Do you want to make your own shoes? Hmm. Like, why did I ever get into this? So this is one of those careful what you wish for moments.
If there's ever a lost password for anything legitimate, a bank or whatever, email, whatever, that can be accessed if you contact the company, right? Like, hey, this is me. Here's my documentation. Like, it's a pain in the ass. Believe me, it takes steps, but it can be done.
That's what I'm saying. In this case, he is his own bank. There is no one to contact. That's why he said, would you make your own shoes? Would you, you know, build your own house if you weren't Adam? You are your own bank. There is nobody that can help you, according to Thomas.
All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to do our live Q&As on the Stereo app. We'll bid adieu to Brian and Gina, and we'll be right back with your questions right after this.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device, because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.